Gun control is the best thing you can do for crooks and gangsters. I want you to have nothing. If I'm a bad guy, I'm always going to have a gun.
Sammy Gravano, convicted mob assassin.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 326 to be exact, and this week I want to talk about surviving. A little bit more on de-escalation, but I am going to talk about some surviving techniques. Now, many of you know I do another podcast, which I've been not really putting up a whole lot of new episodes lately, but it's called Today's Survival Show, and I talk a lot about prepping over there. That's not what this episode is about here, though, on the Handgun World podcast. I'm going to talk about how to survive a fight, or basically how to not even get into a fight. So it's kind of a continuation of last week. Last week I talked a lot about de-escalation towards the end of that episode, and gave you an acronym to go by to help do some de-escalating of conflicts. Because, you know, as I've mentioned before, we want to try to avoid using our firearms for self-defense. But we will if we have to, if there is no other choice. Man, it's so messy. Man, if you go to a Masada Yub course, you will see how messy it is if you get into a defensive use of your gun. Even if you don't go to one of Mass's courses. Just, you know, if you've been paying attention in the news, what people have had to go through after they legitimately used their firearm in self-defense. Woo! I tell you, I just want to try to avoid that the rest of my life. And so I figure that learning how to survive an encounter, learning how to avoid encounter, learning how to de-escalate if that bad day comes and you find yourself in a terrible situation. I think all that is just as important as the weapon we carry. Would you agree with me on that? I hope that you would. Anyway, I'm in the Handgun World mobile studio. I'm heading out to an appointment, so I'm going to record this in segments. This first segment, I would like to spend some time, now that well over a week has passed since that tragic, awful shooting at the African-American church in South Carolina by a nutbag. First of all, my hearts and my prayers go out to their families. You know, I have lost loved ones tragically. Not by shooting, but I have lost loved ones in my family tragically. And so I have a small taste, but not much, not a big taste, but I have a small taste of what they went through. But it is awful. It's extremely awful when these things happen. When these things happen, it just saddens my heart, because they don't have to happen. Or they don't have to happen with as much frequency and as much devastation as they do. So finally, I'm going to go ahead and weigh in. I like to wait. When things like this happen, I like to wait before I start saying anything, because I don't want to start talking about things that are premature or untrue and so forth. That's not fair to you, the listener, to do that. But I found that there's a simple mathematical equation regarding events like this. And it's almost as simple as 1 plus 1 equals 2. It's almost that simple. Here's the simple mathematical equation. Mentally ill nut job plus gun-free zone equals disaster. Ha! See, there you go. You won't get that in any kind of a math class or algebra class or any kind of mathematics class, will you? All you got to do is add two things together, and they always equal a constant. And the two things you can add together is an untreated or a not properly treated mental nutbag plus one gun-free zone equals disaster. And it does every time, doesn't it? What part of gun-free zones are people not understanding? And in South Carolina, churches are gun-free zones. In some states, they're gun-free zones. I think the specific law in South Carolina is that the church can give you permission, but you have to get written permission from the church to carry there. Correct me if I'm wrong. Texas used to be that way. Now in Texas, a church has to post the legal 30-06 sign. And then it becomes a gun-free zone. But if they don't post the legal 30-06 sign, then it's not a gun-free zone. The church I go to, we are not posted, so we carry. And I'm sure that it's a big church. I'm sure there's a lot of people in there carrying. And when I go to Bible study, I don't go to Bible study at the church building. I go to Bible study at some church member's home. But if I were going to the church building, I'd be carrying in there too. And we have, of course, multiple buildings because I go to a pretty large church. And by the way, most of you know that I am a strong Christian. I do believe in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, the Lord of my life. I am here living a second chance in life, folks. I beat stage 4 lymphoma, and I beat cancer that went to my brain and had brain surgery in September of 2014 because of the power of God and great doctors. God rose up. Excellent doctors. He has given doctors tremendous talent to treat people like me and many others. And I have a second chance. And I'm telling you what, I am trying the best I can to make the most of this second chance. I got some pretty serious challenges with my wife right now. As many of you know, she has ALS. So maybe this is God's plan. It was for me to live, to be able to be here for my wife as she struggles through her terminally illness disease, and also to be the best father that I can to my son. And guess what? To talk to all of you about guns. So anyway, my Bob Main simple mathematical equation that one untreated mental nutbag plus a gun-free zone equals disaster. What do you think of that? When are we going to finally realize that we have to get to the root of these problems? Mental illness is serious in this country and in many others. Pills don't fix it. You know, a lot of doctors like to just throw pills at people, and while they may help, they do help. Medication does help. I know that for sure. I know that from experience with family members. Medication helps. They also are in huge need. These people are in huge need, and they need other help. They need counseling. They need attention. They need parenting. I don't want to sound like I'm preaching here. I don't want to sound like I'm trying to give a sermon. I'm speaking the truth, folks, and I think it would be a disservice to you and anybody else listening to this show if I did not speak the truth. I hope you'd agree with me. So I'm speaking the truth. These people need help. That young man, obviously, is racist. Obviously, he's severely mentally disturbed. He got the gun legally, so how many gun laws were broken? I think it was gifted to him, wasn't it? And I think it was gifted to him legally. So, you know, another background check or a limit on magazine capacity and all that, all those extra laws that politicians want to pass would not have stopped this guy from doing that. That church should not be a gun-free zone. No church should be a gun-free zone. Really, nowhere should be a gun-free zone. How many of, you know, you hear so many of these gun control advocates, they get up on stage and they get on TV and they say, how many people have to die from senseless gun violence before we start doing this and that and the other thing? Here's what I say. How many of these shootings have to happen in gun-free zones before we get the picture that gun-free zones don't work? And by the way, where are all the stories of the forgiveness that we saw and still see from South Carolina? How come the media is not reporting that? I thought it was unbelievable that parents and family members of the victims who were killed, you know, some of them did the godly thing, although they were grieving. And although they had suffered a horrible, horrible loss, they told that young man, the perpetrator, "We forgive you." Love beats evil all the time, ladies and gentlemen. And what a great story that is. What a great example that is, that everybody can learn from that. Love and forgiveness, it beats evil all every time. It already has. It always will. And it did in Charleston, South Carolina recently. Forgiveness. Learn it. Practice it. It will change your life. Why isn't that being reported? Why do we not see that as part of the news media? Is that because it's too positive? Is that why? And the news media likes to report negativity? Okay, I'm going to get off my soapbox. But hopefully, this was a reminder, this tragic shooting. Hopefully, let's take something from the tragedy. Hopefully, it's a reminder for you to carry everywhere and carry all the time. And try to avoid gun-free zones. Those poor people, I mean, they wanted to go to Bible study. And, you know, when I say avoid gun-free zones, if they take what I say to heart, it means that they have to avoid going to Bible study. Because they go to Bible study in a gun-free zone. I would like to appeal to anybody listening to this show that has a leadership position in your church. Please do not make your church a gun-free zone. If it's state law in your state that it has to be a gun-free zone, please work hard to try to fix that. Maybe get together with other church leaders and lobby your local politicians to eliminate the gun-free zones in churches. I recently got an email from a listener wanting to know what to do regarding churches and making churches more secure. Well, like I said, church members need to carry, if it's allowed. Churches need to have security teams. Many churches have excellent security teams. Ours does, when I go to does, has an excellent security team. And even if it's a small church, all they have to do is, if the state law says they have to have permission, so find some people that have a concealed carry license if you need one in your state. Train them. I know a few decent trainers that you could send them to get some good training on how to handle their gun and how to handle conflicts and defensive scenarios and things like that. Plus, there are some special church security training sessions. Train them up, send them, and arm members of your church. If you get some pushback on that, start reminding people about the African American Christian Church in South Carolina and this event. And remind your politicians. Don't let your politicians forget about this. Because you know what's going to happen? Enough time is going to go by. People are going to forget about it, and we don't want that. And the last thing I want to say before we take a break and get into some topics, more topics on de-escalation and surviving an encounter, is can we please stop with the racism already? Maybe this guy was racist, yeah. I mean, you know, he did and said some racist things. Okay, there are people that are still that way. There are horrible people that still have that kind of evil in their heart that makes them a racist. But can we please stop that? We have, you know, that's not the root of the problem here. The root of the problem with this tragic event is not racism. I mentioned earlier what the root of the problem is. And let's stop trying to ban flags. This is ridiculous. How come retailers are taking the Confederate battle flag off of their shelves but not the Nazi flag? Why is that? You know, you think about that. The government's not really trying to ban a flag. Okay, I understand that that in South Carolina they're trying to remove the Confederate battle flag from flying above the Capitol. Maybe that's not a bad idea. I don't know. But come on. This isn't about flags and what they represent. And you know what? I remember reading in history about a band of rebels, about people who were called separatists, insurrectionists, rebels. They were called thugs. They owned slaves. They were called all sorts of names. And guess what? They were the revolutionists. They were the colonists of the American Revolution. And they won. And they formed this great country. Do you want to ban their flag? They were rebels. They owned slaves. They were insurrectionists, or they were separatists. They had to fight a war to rebel. So it's not just the Confederates that were rebels. What about the original colonists, the revolutionists, the rebels that rebelled against the British government to form this great country, the United States of America? How come nobody is calling to stop the sale of the original American flag? The original American flag with the stars, the round 13 stars, and the red, white, and blue, huh? How come that's... Why? Why? How come people aren't calling for that to be banned? How hypocritical that some people are. Would you agree? How hypocritical? Let's get rid of that Confederate battle flag because of those rebels and they owned slaves and that's what it was all about. But yet, you know, before that, when our country was found, they too were rebels. And some of them owned slaves. What a double standard we play. I'm not saying that that was okay. Slavery is a horrible thing and should never, ever, ever be allowed again in any society. As a matter of fact, it still exists in some societies in the world, in Africa. And it's wrong, and it's horrible. And I'm glad we got rid of it so long ago. Let me tell you what, getting rid of a flag is not going to solve anything. As a matter of fact, it may make this worse. You got to think about that. Am I sounding like a libertarian right now or something? I'm not a libertarian, but every once in a while, you know what? When people's individual liberties are squashed, I get ticked off. It's a person's right. If they want to fly, if they want to own and fly a Confederate battle flag, it's their right. And so far, the government has not gone after that right. Retailers and sellers, I think, are making a very dumb decision to not sell it. But, you know, I'm sure if people want to own one, they never would. I would never consider getting that flag. I would never consider getting a Nazi flag or an ISIS flag, even though I can buy any of those three and many other flags out there. I'm not going to do it. I think those are I think those are reprehensible. But you know what? It's a person's right to do it. It's their right of freedom of expression. And maybe the state capital of South Carolina should not fly that. It is part of their history. And like I said earlier, it is part of the United States history that this country was formed by a bunch of rebels that were not respected by the mothership. And they won. And you know, somebody put on my Facebook page recently that if a rebellion succeeds, it's called patriotism, but if it fails, it's called treason. I think that's what it was. It was something like that. Anyway, go check out my Facebook page. Check out my Bob Main page. I started a thread on this. And, you know, what kind of a double standard? You know, because part of our history, because many of our ancestors fought a rebellion and won, that's okay. But the group of southern states that fought a rebellion and lost, what are they? Traitors? They're treasonists? Come on, folks. And I'm a Yankee. All right, I was born in New York City. And I was raised in Wisconsin most of my life, which is why I call Wisconsin home. I'm a Yankee. I'm a Yankee with a gun, and I talk like this. It's about freedom in America, and we are losing it, and we are losing it rapidly. Okay, I am going to stop. Let's take a break and get on to the next segment.
80% of all homicides are gang and drug trafficking related, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. That means at least 80% of all firearm homicides are caused by gangs in the drug trade. Not you, not your neighbor, despite what Dianne Feinstein might think. On average, gang members arrested for murder are often suspects in two other homicides. These two items together show that 80% of gun homicides could be stopped by incarcerating as few as 3,000 well-known repeat violent offenders. That's who Feinstein should be working against, not you. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, I'm back. Hey, I want to let you know about something I did recently. I changed the address on my Utah non-resident concealed carry license. I do have an active Utah non-resident. I do pick up a little bit of extra area in the country where I can carry. Unfortunately, I let my Florida non-resident lapse. I think I'm going to renew that one and probably get an Arizona pretty soon anyway. You know, you guys know how I feel about having multiple concealed carry licenses. I think it's excellent. And I think you need to strategically get non-resident concealed carry permits based on where you intend to go and based on what extra states that you pick up when you do that. Anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting when I sent in a change of address, and by the way, it's been a while since I moved, and I forgot to change the address on my Utah license, and once I finally realized that I forgot to do it, I got it done right away. It's interesting, I had to send it into the Utah Bureau of Criminal Identification, and woo, that kind of, you know, when I saw that address, I went, ugh, what? I mean, I know I sent it there before because that's how I got my license. But Utah Bureau of Criminal Identification, you know what that kind of said to me? It kind of said that they assume I'm a criminal first, and then they're going to prove that I'm not once they do their checks. All right, isn't the system supposed to be where you're assumed not a criminal until they prove that you are? Oh, I know. You know, these states, they roll concealed firearms permits under all kinds of state agencies. But when I had to write that down on the envelope, Utah Bureau of Criminal Identification, I thought, I'm not a criminal. I'm a good guy. That's why I'm allowing you to background check me like crazy and apply for a concealed carry license. If I was a bad guy, I wouldn't be doing all this. So why do you have to put me under criminal identification department? Oh, well. Anyway, it was one of those things. I thought I would share that with you. One of those weird things. I think when I used to live in Oklahoma, they put concealed carry under the health department. Go figure that one out. I don't know if they've changed that. To all my Oklahoma friends, tell me if they've changed that. Yeah, I remember you had to apply through the health department in the state to get a concealed carry license for Oklahoma. Kind of weird, isn't it? Oh, well. All right. Let's get to the main topic after a couple of announcements here that I want to make. The first announcement is our Seattle class is getting pretty full, the class up in Squim with Glenn Tate and the team. Same with Ohio. That's starting to get pretty full as well. As you know, Ben and I are going to Ohio in September to teach Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced, our two-day class. Same class we're teaching up in Washington. October 10th, we're going to do just regular one-day Beyond Concealed Carry in San Antonio at Lone Star Handgun, a little bit different range this time. And so for some of you that have never been to our Beyond Concealed Carry, but you want to take the advanced course in November, that's a good option. You know, you can have training from another training company, too. That's fine. But if you're here in South Texas and you want to train a one-day class with us October the 10th, you'll find that on my website at handgunworld.com. My voicemail number, 210-646-1727. You're going to hear a voicemail pretty soon from a listener, which kind of sets up the main topic here. 210-646-1727, or go to handgunworld.com and click the Call Me button. Thanks for all of you who support me by buying through my Amazon link. Even though I'm disappointed that Amazon has pulled the sales of the Confederate battle flag, which, by the way, I'd never own that thing. I would never buy it. But earlier in the show, I told you how I feel that, you know, I think it's a bad mistake. But you know what? Retailers are perfectly within their rights to not sell something. That's their choice. Yeah, they can choose not to sell something, and you can choose to buy it elsewhere. But anyway, I hope it doesn't get to the point where it's where they try to ban you from even owning things that express, you know, parts about our history. Anyway, thank you for supporting me on Amazon. You don't have to spend any extra money, but you can support me by buying your Amazon purchases through my store. Just go to handgunworld.com, click on the Amazon store, follow that link right into Amazon. Prices are the same and all that. And don't forget about the Shooters Club. I did change the password. You should have got an email from us with the new password. For $8 a month or $75 for an entire year, you can have access to about 36 videos, and the shotgun video is coming up pretty quick, and I'm going to put a new audio podcast coming up. So Ben and I, you know, we work pretty hard to put on good stuff for you, and you can support us and watch our videos and listen to our content. That way, $8 a month, $75 a year. The sign-up link is also at handgunworld.com. So let's listen to this voicemail from Andrew, a listener.
Hey, Bob, this is Andrew from Southern Maine. Long-time listener, first-time caller, I think that's what I'm supposed to say. I'm calling to share some thoughts about your most recent show on de-escalation. I've been in law enforcement for a long time, and I think that that's a real important topic to discuss. You know, I kind of wanted to share some thoughts that I've experienced. That acronym that you came up with, that TACOS acronym, I think is brilliant. I can't tell you how many confrontations I've dealt with, you know, both between, you know, people that have called, people that have been called upon, or confrontations, you know, where that I've been in with somebody where, you know, a violation of one or more of those, you know, those aspects of that acronym basically is the root of the problem. And I've been able, you know, I've got a lot of training in de-escalation myself and verbal judo, you know, and I've been able to avoid, you know, physical confrontations with people, you know, just being able to listen and talk to people and communicate with them in an effective manner. You know, and I can't tell you how many people I've dealt with that have been in physical fist fights or armed confrontations where, you know, the question that I ask is, well, why did you attack this person, or why were you involved in this fight? Well, because they called me a name, or they insulted me, or, you know, they challenged me when I said something to them. And if somebody had just said, look, you know, you're right, you know, it's, understand that it's not a challenge to your manhood or your womanhood, their, whatever their bad day is all about doesn't have to, you know, rain on your parade and doesn't have to turn your bad, you know, your good day into a bad day just because you are feeling challenged by them. So I just wanted to share that, and, you know, and if people could, you know, take that TACOS thing to heart, I think that we would have a lot less problems, and, you know, both for concealed carry people to try and avoid, you know, drawing their weapons. I do carry concealed quite frequently, and I don't leave the, you know, my pistol is like my Visa card. I don't leave home without it. I think that was American Express. But it's one of those things where, you know, you don't necessarily need to engage in that kind of thing just to prove that you are, you know, the biggest or the baddest or whatever. Because you don't know who you're getting involved with. And I guarantee you there's always somebody out there bigger than you, faster than you, and stronger than you. And you don't know if that person that you're about to get involved in a confrontation with is that person. So you got to be smart about these things. I appreciate all you're doing, Bob. Many thanks and prayers for you and your family and pushing through. And keep up the good work. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Andrew, and thank you for your service to us as a law enforcement officer. So that leads me into the main topic, basically how to survive and how to continue to de-escalate if you are in a situation, a bad situation. All right, so let's get into a little bit more about de-escalation here. What to do when you're feeling threatened. First of all, lots of patience and staying calm. I've got some more sources that I got this information from, and I'm going to put those sources, I'm going to link to them in the show notes. So if you want to read everything that I have sourced for this information, go to handgunworld.com, find the show notes and links for this episode number 326, and you'll see them right there. When it comes to patience and staying calm, when it comes to de-escalating, the best weapon you have is not necessarily your gun. The best weapon you have is your patience. Any situation that feels like it could potentially turn violent requires a whole lot of patience on your part. Like I talked about last week, challenging them with your own threats, that's just gonna escalate. So work on your patience level. Your patience can keep the situation much more calm and potentially diffuse the attacker. That's the whole thing. Next is make sure you make eye contact. Make sure you make eye contact. Looking away can sometimes be perceived by your aggressor as a sign that you are afraid. You have to be patient and calm, but also show a position of strength. This works, folks. Now stay with me on this. You got to show us a position of strength, but not over aggression. Keeping eye contact is a sign that you are a confident person. You know, when I had that recent situation where the guy was angry with me in my yard, I kept eye contact with him. And, you know, I didn't show fear and things like that, and it worked. You know, you don't want to antagonize somebody, but you also don't want to appear as a soft target. You don't want to be an easy victim. Next, closed-ended statements. Don't ask questions or engage the aggressor anyway. Okay? Don't ask questions or engage him. If you are in an uncomfortable situation and you're being provoked or verbally abused, the best way to de-escalate the situation is simply don't take the bait. Don't take the bait. You're going to get baited with, you know, probably insults and verbal attacks and things like that. Resist the urge to defend yourself verbally. Okay? Resist the urge to start asking things like, why? Why are you doing this? Or what is it you want? What do you want? What do you want? Okay? When you make open-ended statements like that, you're inviting additional conversation from your attacker, and you're giving him or her a lot more opportunities to escalate into something even worse. Next, don't fight back or become aggressive. Responding to a threat with another threat is probably the quickest way to turn that thing upside down and just, you know, escalate it like crazy, and then it's going to get out of hand. Do not become engaged with them abusively, and it can very easily turn into something. Even if it starts as verbal abuse, it can turn into physical abuse. Your personal safety should always be a priority. Okay? And if you find yourself in a situation that becomes either verbally abusive or physically abusive, you need to try to do everything you can to de-escalate before it turns into violence. Now, if it turns into violence, or it's looking like it's unavoidable, then hopefully you're carrying and you have a weapon that can end violence against you. Okay? The people at Bible study in South Carolina recently, obviously there was probably no de-escalating that guy. I would imagine they probably didn't have much of a chance, or if they did, it had little chance of succeeding. And violence occurred, and nobody had the weaponry to stop him. That's a terrible thing. So, now let's talk about surviving and avoiding these types of situations. First of all, we've all heard avoid dangerous people and dangerous places. We've all heard about the four S's. Don't do stupid things with stupid people in stupid places at stupid times. Okay? Don't do stupid things with stupid people in stupid places at stupid times. If you just remember that, you're going to avoid probably 95% of the stuff that may come your way. The primary goal of self-defense is to avoid becoming a victim of violence. And the best way? Don't be where it's going to occur. Now, you can't always predict this, and like I've always said before, don't start thinking that you're the kind of person that doesn't need to carry a gun because, well, I just don't go anywhere where I would need a gun. I stay away from those places, Bob. I'm doing what you're saying. No, you don't. Do you go home, sleep in your own bed, and be with your family? If you go home, sleep in your own bed, and be with your family, guess what? You just went somewhere where you might need a gun. Sorry. Sorry if that frightens you, offends you, or whatever, but it's the truth. I speak the truth on this show. And if I get the truth wrong, I take what John F. Kennedy said to heart. John F. Kennedy once said, "A problem does not become a mistake until you fail to correct it." So I correct problems so they don't become a mistake. And I speak the truth. You might need a gun at home. Okay? In fact, home is a likely place. If you're going to need a gun, home is a likely place that you might need one. So you can't say that you always avoid dangerous people in dangerous places, but do the best that you can. Okay, learn to trust your feelings about other people. You know, situational awareness. If you're in a situation and you're around people and you say, this just doesn't feel good, get out. Learn to trust your gut feel. If you're in a place and it's not feeling good and it's not feeling right, get out. Go eat somewhere else. Go to a different place. Go see some different people. Whatever situation that you're in, if you're in a parking lot or a roadway and something doesn't feel comfortable, get out of there. Okay? And, you know, this might seem like some depressing advice. And maybe it is, but, and you know, a lot of us don't want to see the world this way. That's the problem. A lot of us go to great pains to avoid being, you know, rude or appear being racist or suspicious, or we don't want to acknowledge the fact that evil exists in the world, but it does, folks. Please accept the truth. Okay? And the truth is that most of us are pretty good at detecting ulterior motives of people. Okay? Learn to trust your intuitions. Women are very good at this. You know, if you're with a woman who is your wife or your significant other, learn to trust her intuitions. If she says, "Hey, this is not a good place. I don't think we should be here." Trust that and get out. Okay, the next principle here of surviving and avoiding. This one I kind of sometimes take a little bit of exception to, but I'll throw it out there and see what you say. And basically it says, don't defend your property. Whatever your training, you should view any invitation to violence as an opportunity to die or to be sent to prison for killing another human being. So violence must truly be a last resort. If you look out your kitchen window, you look out your house and you see a group of teenagers destroying your car, running out there and shooting them for doing that is a bad idea. Stay inside, call the police, have your weapon ready inside the house in case violence comes to you when you are in your house. I don't care if you're a trained Navy SEAL and you keep a loaded AR by the front door all the time. You don't want to kill a teenager for vandalism, and you don't want to get shot by somebody else in that situation if you can help it. You can replace things. They're insured. Objects you can replace. You can't replace your life. You can't replace the life of a loved one. So unless you or another person is being physically harmed or the attack does seem imminent, avoiding the situation should be your only concern. Now, here's a scenario I want to pose to you. Let's say you're putting your groceries in your car. You just went grocery shopping. And a man shows up at your side with a gun and he says, "Get in the car, you won't get hurt." Now, your instincts are probably bad here, because getting in the car is probably the last thing you should do. So he says something like, get in the car or I'm going to blow your head off. Whatever bad options you might have at the moment, complying with the demands of a person who is seeking to control your movements like that is usually a bad idea. Their intent is violence. Whether you get in the car or whether you don't get in the car, their intent is violence. You want to escape. You want to escape the situation somehow, and getting into your confined car is not a method of escape. If someone puts a gun to your head and demands your purse or your wallet, hand it over immediately and get out of the situation. Okay, if they continue to come after you, or if it looks like they are going to commit violence against you, then you better have your firearm and shoot to defend yourself. Ladies, if you're grocery shopping and a guy points a gun at you and says, get in your car, drop your groceries, get out of the situation, make yourself a moving target, do not get in your car. And when you can create some distance from your attacker, or find some cover, or even find some concealment, draw that weapon and be prepared to use it to defend your life. Okay, this is why you should get training in the art of self-defense and escaping. There are training classes on how to escape situations like this. Okay, you need to be creating distance. You need to move. You need to move very swiftly and very forcefully and not in a straight line and get away. It's very difficult for somebody to hit a moving target with a handgun. It's very difficult for them to be on the move. Make yourself a hard target. Do not make yourself a soft target. So if you find yourself in a situation where some predator wants to control you, the time for listening to instructions and attempting to remain calm has passed. It will not get easier to resist and escape the first few moments. The first few moments are critical, folks. The first few moments that this happens, probably the first 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Okay? And however bad the situation looks, you have to assume that it's only going to get worse. So to hesitate is to put yourself at risk and at the mercy of some sociopathic evil nutbag. And these people do exist, and quit denying that evil exists, because it does. True self-defense is not based on techniques, but it's based on principles. Yeah, it is good to know how to do things like deliver a palm strike or an elbow or a kick to someone's head with power. Martial arts, fantastic stuff. You need to know that. But it's a lot more important to know when to unleash with whatever tools you have for the purpose of immediate escape. It's important for you to know how to improvise. Make something else a weapon. Unleash whatever tools you have, and even if you don't have any tools to begin to run, start running. Start getting out of the situation. There's a lot of important differences between effective self-defense training and martial arts. Many martial arts courses are geared towards competition. And my son did competitive martial arts for a long time, and he became a black belt and everything, and he did real well with it, but it was more of a competition-oriented martial art that he studied. I like defensive martial arts, training to fight or escape. That's what I like. Okay? Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is good training. However, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is good training if you've gone to the ground. And, of course, a lot of times a violent encounter is going to go to the ground, but how about trying to avoid it going to the ground? How about trying to avoid the situation where you go down to the ground with an aggressor that wants to kill you? How about getting out of there? How about escaping if you can? Quick, now, escape, get out, quickly, fast, move, create distance. I think that's better. If you find yourself on the ground, then I hope you got some good ground fighting techniques. And that's where that training is good. But, you know, don't rely on that as your sole method and say, well, you know what? Hey, I'm a brown belt in BJJ. I'm fine. I'm not quite so sure about that. especially for somebody that's got the drop on you, that's got the advance on you, that has the edge over you, and they are committed to violence no matter what. Okay? It's important to remain standing and mobile as long as you can. And the key word there is mobile, mobile, mobile. Okay? Now, the only clear exception is if you happen to have access to a safe room. If you have access to a safe room, like in your house or somewhere else, which is a fortified room, I've talked about that. I did a podcast several years ago, and I brought a lady named Andrea on the show to talk about safe rooms. If you've got a fortified room in your house set up with a phone line that can't be cut, and it's well fortified and you got weapons in there, fine. Then, you know what, if you can retreat to that, that's great. But if you don't have that, or you can't immediately get to that, or you're not at home and you can't get to a bona fide safe area like that, get on the move and get out of there. And use that weapon if escaping does not work. Now, you know what's interesting? You know what's kind of ironic here? Carrying a gun can make it much easier to ignore provocations. You know, when you start to carry, you start to almost train yourself and learn how to ignore provocations and stay out of conflicts like this. That's one of the great things about carrying a gun. That's why if everybody carried, and I'm going to say it again, if everybody carried and had training, we would have a much more polite society. But think about that. When you have a weapon, if you are armed, you can't afford to be lured into casual altercations, no matter how obnoxious your opponent's getting. Your impulse to save your face easily takes over. With a weapon, you just simply have to avoid conflict unless you're given no other choice. And here's some things for you to think about. As of 2009, violent offenders in the U.S. averaged 52 months in prison before being returned to the streets. I'll say that again. As of 2009, violent offenders in the United States served an average of 52 months in prison before being returned to the streets. Only a little over 4 years. For murderers, the average was 118 months. Rapists, it was 94 months. So think about that. Why genuine murderers and rapists are ever released is incomprehensible. In my opinion, they should never be released. Now, here's something that might make your skin crawl, because this is so true. A Canadian study found that psychopaths are about 2.5 times more likely than ordinary criminals to be released from prison. Why? The psychopaths can successfully con parole boards. And I'll bet that's the same situation in the United States, even though that was a Canadian study. And this defense of insanity, I tell you what, folks, I don't really like the defense of not guilty by reason of insanity. I don't like that at all, because I find it very difficult to believe that people don't know right from wrong, that they get to a point where they don't know right from wrong. I find that very, 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 very difficult to believe. I really do. I'm having a hard time swallowing that pill every time I hear that. Come on. You know, we learn right from wrong at a very, very young age. And no matter how bad our parents were, society basically teaches us right from wrong. You mean that guy didn't know that it was wrong in the middle of a Bible study at church to start shooting people? You mean the guy at Sandy Hook Elementary School didn't realize that it was wrong to go into the school and start shooting elementary school kids? Do you mean that the guy, and notice I'm not saying their names, do you mean that the guy that is in Colorado, the guy in Colorado who went into the movie theater, a gun-free zone, by the way, because one mentally ill nutbag plus one gun-free zone equals disaster? You mean he didn't know it was wrong? I call BS on that. I say this is a that's a ridiculous plea. They know right from wrong. Evil exists in the heart of man. That's what this is. They know right from wrong. So I don't buy that. If you're present while you're in a place of business that's being robbed, and you cannot escape, it makes a lot of sense to obey orders, freeze, to get down on the floor, because the focus is on you. Most robbers just want to get the money and register and run. However, if they start to get violent, or they start taking hostages or shooting people, then you need to do whatever it takes to do two things at that point. You need to escape, or you need to use your firearm to fight back. And there are all kinds of defensive gun uses in a place of business where someone is trying to rob the place. And if they're robbing you at gunpoint, guess what? They're robbing you at gunpoint. They have said that they're ready to commit violence. Make motions like you're going to give the guy the money or whatever he wants, but you need to figure out how to escape and how to draw your weapon and keep that weapon on you. If you are allowed to carry in your place of business, keep that weapon on you. Most likely, the last thing that that robber expects is for you to be armed. And how many defensive gun uses have you seen? How many videos have you seen where the clerk behind the counter, or the manager behind the counter, or the manager comes out of another room, and he or she has a gun? And the presence of that gun and the willingness of the clerk or the store manager to fight back with force makes the robber change his mind. But escaping and surviving should be your primary goal. But realize that some people, right off the bat, let you know that they intend to commit violence. And it's messy, and it's scary, and it's nasty. And this is something that a lot of people, when they come to our training classes, they don't realize. And we try the best we can to simulate scenarios of self-defense, but you know, you really can't. About the only training class that you can probably take that really is an excellent simulator of what you're going to need to do in self-defense is probably two of them. Taking a force-on-force class, taking a hands-on-gun class, a 0 to 5 feet gunfighting class like I took with John Payne a few years ago that I want to take again, you know, or force-on-force with airsoft pistols, you know, or if there's a Krav Maga school or any other kind of a martial art that shows you how to face people with a gun and things like that, which I've taken a couple classes on that. That's realistic training, and if you can do that, and if you have a self-defense school that can teach that. But the ones that are worth their salt, they're also going to emphasize getting out of the situation, escaping fast, moving. And if there's no path to escape, draw that gun and be willing, ready, willing, and able to use it. So can you tell I'm passionate about this? I am. It's why we do this. Ladies and gentlemen, it's why I've spent 5 years as a regular guy who decided that I wanted to protect myself and protect my family because it was my God-given right. I realized one day, finally, in 2005, you know what? It's my God-given right to defend myself. I have a right to life. God gave me the right to life. And because of a close encounter situation, not a close encounter of the third kind, but a close encounter with a potential bad guy back in 2005, I decided, you know what, it's time for me not only to carry a weapon, but also to start learning and training and practicing on how to defend myself. And I hope that you make the same decision. And if you've made the decision and that's why you're listening to this show, I hope that you start to train yourself in proper ways, to start training yourself what to do, how to handle that gun properly, how to put hits on target while you're on the move and while your target is on the move, how to get out of the situation. I hope you start taking training on how to get out of the situation. I hope you have training on what do you do if for some reason you don't have your gun with you. I don't know why you would, unless you happen to be walking into one of those disastrous gun-free zones. But let's say you don't have your gun with you. Do you know how to get out of a violent situation where someone has pulled a knife on you, or you have, you're outnumbered, there's three on one, or they do have a gun? You know, getting back to the scenario I presented to you earlier, if you're in a place of business that's being robbed. Hey, folks, you know what? It's better to dive right through a plate glass window and get out of there than to allow yourself to be herded to the back of the store. Don't allow yourself to be herded to the back of the store. And don't believe the crap when they say, no one's going to get hurt. Just give me your money. Hey, you know what? Don't believe that crap. Get out of there. Get out of the situation. Or get out just enough so that if you're armed, you can successfully deploy your firearm. And there's probably well over a 90% chance that the bad guy, at that point, the guy trying to rob the store or the establishment or whatever it is going to change his mind and say, oops, you know what? I just ran into a hard target, not a soft target. I am going to leave and go find a soft target, and boom, he is out of there. The last place you want to find yourself is in a fetal position in the back of the room being threatened to be shot with several other people or some hostages because you didn't know how to escape or you weren't armed enough to fight back. So, I wanted to take a little bit of time here to talk about some more de-escalation, which will help you survive, and some more techniques that people have put out there that I kind of like on surviving. I'm going to do another audio podcast, and I'm going to put it up on the Shooters Club because I have even more information that I want to share with you. So the Shooters Club members are going to get the benefit of that. So if you're a member of the Shooters Club, probably in about a week from now, you're going to get another bonus episode. You're going to get a podcast episode that you can listen to that's going to have even some more details and more things that I've come up with on my own that I think will help you. If you're not a member of the Shooters Club, well, you know what to do. Go to handgunworld.com and click the Shooters Club link. Folks, I hope you enjoyed these last couple weeks here about how to stay out of violent situations. You know, the couple times that I've almost gotten into one, de-escalation worked for me. And people say that it does work if you know what you're doing. And it's not going to work all the time. Nothing's foolproof. Nothing is 100%. We all know that. So this is why you have to know. You have to know a lot. You have to know a lot. And one of the overused statements, but it's also true, is you don't know what you don't know. And you don't know what you don't know it until you know you don't know it. How's that one? Okay, with that said, thanks for listening to another episode of Your Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And please know that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Catch you next week. Goodbye.